We need to accept our sexual orientation as a God-given gift rather than making it sound like it's a battle between who you're made to be and who you are.
Reverend Lively, is Vicky being controlled by the devil?
My sister was a lesbian and she became a Christian and overcame lesbianism.
You must realize that, of course, gay men living together, the police could arrest you, drag you through the courts just on the suspicion of having sex with another male.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucy Chappell. Queer content creators take YouTube bias to court. Beeching has a lively debate over biblical teachings. And Peter DeWall on breaking down the walls in Australia. Those stories and more this week because you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 17th, 2019. A group of popular queer YouTube video creators are suing the online platform and its parent company, Google. The bias lawsuit filed in U.S. federal court in San Jose, California this week, charges that YouTube suppresses their LGBTQ-specific content. That hurts their ability to accumulate subscribers and sell advertising. Bria Kamm and Chrissy Chambers are the stars of YouTube's Bria and Chrissy channel, which The Washington Post says has about 850,000 subscribers. The lawsuit specifically points to a music video on their channel called Face Your Fears. It shows the couple kissing in front of anti-queer protesters with the lyric, "No more hate, no more shame." YouTube slapped a restricted mode on it for reasons that are unclear to the lesbian couple. That blocks viewers from seeing the video at many schools or libraries, for example. The singing lesbian duo claim in the lawsuit that YouTube's restrictions on access to their content has caused their monthly income to plummet from close to $3,500 to only $500. Other plaintiffs say that they've experienced comparable losses. They include trans activist Chase Ross, non-binary queer youth supportive educator Lindsay Amer, and the host of two GlitterbombTV.com channel shows. Peter Obstler is the lead attorney for the plaintiffs in what they are asking to be a class action lawsuit. Obstler told the Post that, by controlling an estimated 95% of the public video communications that occur in the world, Google and YouTube wield unparalleled power and unfettered discretion to apply viewpoint-based content policies in a way that permits them to pick winners and losers. YouTube officials deny the charges and insist that their algorithms don't discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity or expression. The queer YouTuber suit is being handled by the law firm Brown George Ross, the same firm that has a lawsuit pending on behalf of nonprofit Prager University. It alleges that YouTube has removed or restricted its videos because of their politically conservative content.
The European Court of Human Rights now has its very own gay cake case. Gareth Lee's attorneys filed a challenge to a UK Supreme Court decision that Asher's Bakery in Belfast had not discriminated against him by refusing to make a cake with the message, "Support gay marriage." Lee's 2014 cake order had asked that the images of ambiguously hetero Sesame Street Muppets Bert and Ernie illustrate the message. The bakery's evangelical Christian general manager, Daniel MacArthur, claimed the right to refuse to make the cake based on his religious beliefs. MacArthur told The Telegraph newspaper that, "This is what God would want us to do." A lower court sided with Lee. Then the British High Court decided last year that the baker had not violated anti-queer bias laws by refusing the cake request because of Lee's sexual orientation. Lee's challenge in the Eurocourt this week argues that making the cake for a private individual does not suggest that the bakery supports the particular message on it. The lawsuit asserts that there is no such thing as a Christian business that requires special legal protections. It contends that businesses are separate from their owners and their personal and private views. Lee told the Guardian newspaper that, "I'd fight for the rights of business owners to hold their own religious beliefs, but that's not what my case has ever been about." It's not known when the Eurocourt will hear its cake case.
Another slice of bias cake was served by the Trump administration this week in its continuing assault on queer rights advances made during the presidency of Barack Obama. Referencing last year's U.S. Supreme Court Masterpiece Cake Shop ruling, Trump's Department of Labor wants to roll back anti-LGBTQ workplace discrimination protections established by Obama's 2014 executive order. The cake shop ruling narrowly upheld a devout Colorado Christian baker's right to refuse to make a wedding cake for a queer couple. The rule change announced on August 12th would allow religion-exercising organizations with federal contracts to defend themselves against charges of anti-queer hiring practices when the bias is consistent with their sincerely held religious tenets and beliefs without fear of sanction by the federal government. A statement from the ACLU called the rule change taxpayer-funded discrimination in the name of religion, period. That condemnation was echoed by a number of other human rights and queer advocacy groups, including the National Women's Law Center, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, the Human Rights Campaign, and the National LGBTQ Task Force. The proposed rule change is open for public comment until September 16th. In related news, the gay log cabin Republicans announced this week that it supports Donald Trump's re-election.
Trailblazing U.S. trans student activist Gavin Grimm may have finally won the last round. Grimm has been fighting for 4 long years against the Gloucester, Virginia school board policy that required students to use campus bathrooms that match their biological sex. U.S. District Judge Arenda Wright Allen ruled on August 9th that there is no question that the board's policy discriminates against transgender students on the basis of their gender nonconformity. Allen concluded that the perpetuation of harm to a child stemming from unconstitutional conduct cannot be allowed to stand. Grimm graduated from Gloucester High in 2017 and now lives in California. He said he was relieved by the victory, but vowed to continue the fight if the school board files an appeal. Grimm's case was on track to be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court. It was derailed when President Donald Trump rescinded an Obama-era directive that trans students be allowed to choose bathrooms and other gender-segregated facilities consistent with their identity. The High Court will hear 3 other cases this October to decide whether provisions of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, banning discrimination based on gender and several other immutable characteristics, also extend to sexual orientation and gender identity or expression.
A gay Russian couple and their 2 adopted sons have been forced to flee their homeland. Andrei Vaganov signed the papers as a single adopted father in 2010. His partner, Yevgeny Yerofiev, has no legal relationship to them. Russia does not recognize their 2016 legal marriage in Denmark, but they've been jointly raising Denis and Yuri since Vaganov adopted them. Russia's investigative committee launched a probe last month into the Moscow social services workers who granted the adoptions. It's not clear why the investigation was launched now, 9 years later. Vladimir Putin signed the Russian version of a so-called no-promo-homo law in 2013. It outlaws dissemination of gay propaganda to minors. Vaganov told the German news outlet Deutsche Welle that he feared the government would take their kids away. He refused to disclose the family's whereabouts because of the idea that my children could end up in an orphanage. He said, "I was told directly that I would, in any case, be arrested for seducing minors." Vaganov described to Deutsche Welle how their otherwise normal family life imploded when young Yuri had to be rushed to the hospital for what turned out to be appendicitis. Yuri told hospital officials he had 2 dads when they asked if his mother would be picking him up. They then examined Yuri to determine whether he had been sexually abused. The couple's lawyer has advised them to leave the country for their own safety.
Finally, in better queer family news, same-gender couples in China are finding ways to legally protect each other and their relationships. Although consensual adult same-gender sex was legalized in China in 1997, LGBTQ people have virtually no rights there. There is no right to legally wed. However, any adult can name another adult as legal guardian. That became possible in 2017, when the law was expanded to include more than people either above the age of 60 or with reduced mental abilities. The Chinese language news site Sohu.com did a feature story on same-gender couples using the legal guardian option. It allows them to make medical decisions for each other and to establish inheritance and certain other familial rights. However, it's not a simple process. Legal guardianship must be formalized by notaries, and many notaries refuse to serve same-gender couples. Li Chenyang is assistant director of a public notary office in Shanghai. He told Sohu.com that he's seen one or two same-gender couples almost every month. He pointed out that after they come out, many LGBTQ people are estranged from the biological families who would otherwise make such decisions involving medical care and inheritance issues. Li says some of the couples he's seen are treating their mutual guardianship notarization as a marriage certificate, although it has no value as such under Chinese law. A lesbian couple was the first to successfully get a notarized guardianship agreement in 2018. At the time, it required a six-hour meeting to overcome concerns that it would harm the public order and good customs. The South China Morning Post reported on the first mutual guardianship agreement in Beijing this week by an unnamed queer couple that has been together for 10 years. The story noted that more than a dozen other lesbian and gay couples had thus far filed similar notarized guardianship protections for each other in Guangzhou and Chengdu, in addition to Shanghai.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending August 17th, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
If I were a frog, here is what I would say. It's hard being green. It's hard being gay.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out. Support your local public radio station.
I was born in the Netherlands in 1938. I didn't really discover my homosexuality until I came to Australia.
From the beginning with an Australian pioneer later in the program. Ago this week, British Christian rocker Vicky Beeching revealed that she is a lesbian. As a coming-out gift, the public service TV network Channel 4 set Beeching up to debate the most notorious missionary of homophobia from the U.S., Scott Lively.
My sister was a lesbian, and in fact, I was the person that she came out to as a teenager, and I was the person that she turned to later when lesbianism had almost destroyed her. And she became a Christian and overcame lesbianism. And so I have a lot of sympathy for people who struggle with the challenge that Vicky is facing. And I'm very sorry to hear that she has given in to the lie that that she is a homosexual.
That is very much what I've been raised to believe. And I think psychologically that's actually very damaging for people because it makes you feel like you're fighting against yourself. And I think many conservative Christians, maybe Scott too, would agree that it's actually a kind of demonic thing. So you begin to look within yourself thinking, actually, these feelings are not only bad, but I'm being controlled by the devil. I mean, that's what I was told in Nashville. So I think actually it's about coming to terms with who you are and realizing we need to accept our sexual orientation as a God-given gift, rather than making it sound like it's a battle between who you're made to be and who you are.
Reverend Lively, is Vicky being controlled by the devil?
All of us struggle with various different types of temptations. It's part of human life. Christians face these same temptations. There's no difference between the challenges that we have or anyone else in the world has. But we are called to rise above the temptations and to follow the guidance of God. He gave very, very clear, explicit instructions about sexuality. He established the one flesh paradigm in Genesis 1:27 and 2:24, that therefore shall a man leave his family and cleave unto his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And all sexual activity outside of that covenant that he's established for us to have between one man and one woman is illicit and wrong. And just because you have temptations, strong temptations, to go outside of that bond, that doesn't legitimize them. I'm a married man. I've been married for 33 years. But being a man, I'm attracted to women other than my wife. But I've never given in to those temptations.
It's a very different situation,
and all I'm
though. Let
Vicky
me just ask
any
you one question.
Else struggling with homosexuality
so
to do.
If you're a straight person, uh-huh. and people use this argument on me a lot, when I've argued this before just as a theologian, if you're a straight person and you say, actually, it's wrong for me as a Christian to have sex outside of marriage, so I'm going to commit to one person of the same sex, that actually gives you the hope of having a life partner, of finding one person and committing to them. But if you're saying that a Christian gay person actually can't have sex outside of that heterosexual paradigm at all,
well,
it means there's
premise,
no hope
Vicky.
For them to have a partner.
It's a false premise. There's no such thing as a gay person.
So you
it's
do
a,
not think that people are born gay?
It's an identity you adopt.
So how come I can't change
Absolutely
the way I
not.
Feel?
Absolutely not.
I believe
Absolutely
God
not.
Has made me the way that he's made me. It's taken me 35 years to come to terms with that, and I believe it's actually part of my God-wired identity.
Vicky, God has the power to help you to overcome your homosexual inclinations.
That
First
kind
Corinthians
of teaching has been
chapter
so
6,
damaging
9 through 11.
To me, and it damages so many people. I think it's one of those things that can really psychologically scar
you. You keep referring to psychology rather than to spirituality. I think that's your problem. You have adopted the thinking of the world, including the idea
like science,
that,
you mean?
That being criticized
so
damages
science
you.
Is not God-ordained. Well, God didn't give us a brain and intellect.
True science and biblical theology are perfectly consistent.
Okay. So psychology for you does not reflect God's intellect in us as humans. Because I would say that actually psychology is extremely...
What I'm saying
is it part of what it means to be human is to have a brain and to be intelligent, and God gave us that ability. So I think that the studies into sexuality
don't
are very
you
much
care
important.
Don't care what God thinks, Vicky?
I do, and that is actually why I'm taking this step
Vicky,
today
don't you
so
care
that young
what God
people
thinks?
Don't have to listen to the kind of teaching that you peddle. I'm doing a PhD in theology. There are many ways you
no,
can read
are,
the Bible. I love
are,
the Bible with all my heart. It's my favorite book.
I have a THD myself, and
Good.
I also have
and we
a,
can
a
agree
doctor
to
of law.
Disagree on the fact that those
the
texts can be read in different
out.
Ways. If one of those teenagers could just see more people standing up and saying, actually, it's okay. You know, the Bible, which I love and I've studied in depth, you know, it doesn't actually say what we think it says about human sexuality. We've got a lot of it wrong. And I just hope there can be a message of hope to those young people to be who they are, to know that that's okay and that God loves them exactly the way they are.
That was British Christian rocker Vicky Beeching in an August 2014 debate with anti-LGBTQ evangelist Scott Lively. Lively ran as a pro-Donald Trump primary challenger against Massachusetts Republican Governor Charlie Baker last year. His lawsuit charging Baker and the state GOP with violating his rights during the election was dismissed in June. Lively claims to have de-emphasized his homophobic campaign in favor of serving the needy, but he published a brand new anti-LGBTQ screed online just last month. Beeching's Undivided, Coming Out, Becoming Whole, and Living Free from Shame has become an Amazon bestseller. She announced last year that she would not pursue ordination in the Church of England because of its discrimination against queer clergy. So much
cooler online. There's nothing cooler than the world's only international LGBT radio magazine.
Unless it's thiswayout.org.
At thiswayout.org, you'll find program information,
related videos,
expanded features,
news wrap transcripts,
CDs, and downloadable materials.
It might not be cooler than radio,
but there's much more This Way Out at thiswayout.org.
Time it was, and what a time it was, it was. A time of innocence, a time of confidences.
The story of Peter DeWall's life is practically synonymous with the history of the LGBTQ movement in Australia. DeWall shared his story with This Way Out correspondent William Broome in Sydney.
Hello, Peter.
Hello, William.
Can you tell us a bit about where you were born and your family?
I was born in the Netherlands in 1938. I was the youngest child of four children. Both my parents were very working class people.
as a boy, did you have any inkling you may have been gay? And did you have any awareness of what homosexuality was?
I didn't really discover my homosexuality until I came to Australia. My brother came on his own, my older brother, in 1956. Then my mother died. I didn't get on very well with my father. And I thought, what a wonderful thing, I can go to Australia and be a 10-pound pom. They were about 5 years in Australia. I wasn't homesick, I just felt I couldn't settle down. So I thought, best thing to do, go back to Europe and travel around and just find myself. I traveled again on my moped to Spain, through France. Then one day, about 12 months in, there was this like a thunderbolt saying, go back to Australia. My brother, of course, was living in St Kilda, and we started to share what was called in Melbourne a bungalow. I still had sort of doubt. Could I accept myself as a gay man? It got to the stage of, you know, having to decide, would I commit suicide? There were no gay organizations you could turn to. You had some friends, but, you know, these things you might not wish to talk about. Anyway, I overcame that, and, yeah, here I am.
Peter, there's one man more than any other who's been associated with your life. He's played a crucial and important role. His name was Peter Bonsall Boone, and you were together for more than 50 years. How and where did you meet?
We met each other through a mutual friend called David Connolly. Bon was also sharing the house with David Connolly. Bon and I got to know each other, and it went from there. Because Bon actually was born in Sydney, in Des Moines, actually, just next door from here, his mother had become a widow. He was an only child, and he felt that his mother wasn't coping too well on her own. So he spoke to me and asked me, would I join him to come and live in Sydney? You must realize that, of course, gay men living together, the police could come, arrest you, drag you through the courts just on the suspicion of having sharing your body and having sex with another male. So it took about 6 months, I think, before I decided, yes, I want to share my life with him.
Now, how did Checkerboard come about?
The ABC, or the producers of this program, felt that homosexuality was an important issue to deal with. So we were approached, and some females as well. So on the program, there is a female couple and a male couple. To us, it was telling the community, the general community, that we were just a gay couple in the suburbs. The only difference being that we are same-sex attracted. My sister, who was in Australia, and my brother at the time, they were very positive about it, although Bond did get the sack from his job because of appearing on the program. After Bond's sacking from the church, we received a lot of media attention. So, and all the calls were coming here. We had the front room in which we're standing today, where the first phone calls were taken for Phone a Friend. So a roster was developed, we had a couch in the room, people could come and stay overnight and take the phone calls. People inquiring about, did we know a doctor who was sympathetic? They might have had a particular medical condition and felt that they couldn't just go to their local GP. About dentists, about lawyers, about any kind of thing. We also received, and these were mainly in the evening or at night, people who were lonely, country people or people who live out of the metropolitan area, just needing someone to talk to.
On the 24th of June, 1978, you were involved in what became the first Mardi Gras, what we call today the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. What are your memories and how did it come about?
I marched down, you know, from Taylor Square to Hyde Park, and was a very joyous occasion, although looking at the Mardi Gras parade today, it was a very lonely experience. And I'm saying lonely because there was no community to welcome us like we have today. This, you know, joyous occasion of walking up Oxford Street, not down, and being welcomed by the community. We didn't have that the first time. It galvanized our community to perhaps work closer together towards a particular goal of bringing about homosexual law reform, which happened in 1984.
Going forward many years, one of the big campaigns that you were involved in was marriage equality here in Australia. What are your memories and how did you become involved?
Bon and I became involved because, for two reasons. Of course, personally, we wanted to get married. Secondly, we felt, as we had felt with many issues over the 50 years we were both involved in activism in the community, that this was a really good thing for the community to have.
In 2017, Bon passed away. You didn't take a back seat. You didn't step back. You got very much involved, particularly with marriage equality. You were at rallies, you were at events. Do you think in some ways Bon's death made you even more determined to campaign?
It did make me more determined, but it also was a way of dealing with the loss and grief I was suffering. By being still involved in the campaign, I kept meeting people and I felt I was able to contribute to the community. So in a peculiar sort of way, it was of dealing with my grief and loss. I wished I probably had more energy and been able to do more things, to spread my wings further than I've been able to. But overall, the community I see now and I'm with, it's a wonderful achievement to see that Bon and I played a role in bringing that about.
This is William Broome in Sydney, Australia for This Way Out.
That excerpt from William Broome's interview with veteran Australian LGBTQ activist Peter DeWall was edited by Kathy Sport. You can see a video of the complete interview at thiswayout.org. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Wenzel Jones and Michael LeBeau, produced with Brian DeShazer, and from William Broome, with thanks to Kathy Sport and Barry McKay. Vicky Beeching and Simon and Garfunkel performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the Estate of Christopher David Trentum, Christopher Matthews, Richard Merck, and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KBRP LP Bisbee, Arizona, WESU Middletown, Connecticut, CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, and a vast array of community stations and other outlets around the world, including this one. Now y'all stay tuned.